A justice on the U.S. Supreme Court is not required to have any experience as a judge or even a lawyer. This week, Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter and the ranking Democrat, Patrick Leahy, said that they could be satisfied with a nominee with no such credentials. But senators are divided over whether the next Supreme Court justice should base his or her decisions on the Constitution's original meaning, a literal reading of what the original framers and subsequent amenders intended. Now, in the years since the Constitution was ratified in 1787, then amended by the Bill of Rights 4 years later, urgent issues of national consequence have moved the Supreme Court to resolve cases that the framers never confronted. School integration, for instance, voting rights for women, pornography, abortion. And justices have widely interpreted the meaning of particular words or phrases in the Constitution. Jack Rakoff is a professor of history and political science at Stanford University and author of the book Original Meanings, Politics and Ideas in the Making of the Constitution. He joins us from Stanford. Professor Rakoff, thanks very much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here, Scott.
How do you define original meaning?
Original meaning is a theory of constitutional interpretation, and it says that when an interpreter, the Supreme Court, comes to resolve some puzzle about the meaning of a constitutional clause, his goal, and indeed his obligation, should be to interpret that clause as close to what its adopters thought they were doing as he or she possibly can. In effect, the framers didn't have one theory of constitutional interpretation that to which they could have subscribed in 1788 when the Constitution's ratified. Very quickly, they find themselves embroiled in controversies just as bitter and just as partisan, and arguably more so than the ones we have today. And as a byproduct of those controversies, they start developing theories of constitutional interpretation.
How would the framers have reacted to something like the original Supreme Court decision in Brown versus the Board of Education?
You have to think about the original constitutional design of 1787, and then you have to think about what's added to that design after the Civil War, because it's often argued by scholars that one of the great problems here is we've really had two foundings in this country. One was the basic founding at the time of the Revolution, which organizes the government. Mm-hmm. But then major changes come about as a consequence of the Civil War.
It was the 13th Amendment that overturned slavery.
Yeah, the 14th Amendment establishes equal protection and due process, and the 15th Amendment establishes black suffrage. And Chief Justice Warren and his brethren on the bench basically look at this historic material and decide that they can't really resolve the case on that basis. So when Warren writes the opinion and convinces the court to issue a unanimous opinion, in effect, the court is knowingly turning its back on originalism and try to reason for more general principles.
One of the things that I find useful when the Supreme Court begins to hand down a raft of decisions is to often notice that they're not really deciding something on the what we in the outside world consider the substance of a case so much as they are citing precedent and license with previous courts.
Well, the whole debate of originalism, in a sense, is a debate about how important precedent is. The more you believe that law should be stable from one year to the next, then the more skeptical one has to be about the allure of originalism. Because after all, the whole theory of originalism says that there can have been a string of precedents which have basically got the story wrong, and if previous courts or previous Congresses mm-hmm. had been more faithful to the original intent, then they would have decided those cases otherwise. So in a certain sense, for people who believe that the great value of law is to maintain stability, originalism can appear as a very threatening kind of argument because it says we can ignore all those precedents because now we have a better understanding of what the pristine original meaning of the Constitution was. In some ways, this is really the theory of the conservative movement that's known as the Constitution in Exile school. I mean, they basically argue that the decisions of the New Deal court that finally allowed the New Deal legislation to take effect were all, in effect, wrongly decided. And the Constitution has been in exile from its true self for the last 70 years.
You mentioned in the book that one of the things that people who are interested in original meaning have to decide for themselves is, are they citing the importance of original meaning because they believe that the founders had clearer ideas about democracy that were uncluttered by the politics of our time, or for that matter, their time, too?
I personally think that all constitutional interpretation should at least begin by paying some attention to the original intentions, original understandings of the founding period, or for that matter, the post-Civil War period. But I think the framers, in a sense, would think we had really let them down if we trusted their judgment more than our own. Because after all, they were living a great political experiment. And I think they wanted to lay a foundation upon which later generations could build. And then, indeed, for us not to trust our reason would be a denial of everything the American Revolution originally meant.
Jack, thank you very much.
Well, good to talk to you, Scott.
Jack Rakoff, author of Original Meanings, Politics and Ideas in the Making of the Constitution. He teaches history and political science at Stanford University.